19. The perfection of teamwork.
We've got more cannons than people to operate them, Lando said with that wry grin of his. From salvage operations, mostly, taken from the burned-out hulks of Imperial Star Destroyers.
Han wasn't surprised. Lando was among the most capable men he had ever known, and Lando was most capable of all at taking care of Lando and Lando's interests.
We got your cargo unloaded, he snapped. Lando stared at him, confused.
On Cern Padal, I mean, Han went on. We got your cargo off right before the moon fell. You think your business connection will be satisfied with that?
Hey, buddy, it wasn't my fault, Lando said, patting his hands in the air.
It was your fault that we were there, Han growled at him.
And 20,000 people are glad that you were, Lando retorted, pointedly reminding his friend that, though the loss of Chewbacca was a bitter price to pay, the efforts of Han, Anakin, and the Wookiee had saved thousands and thousands of people.
Han chewed his lip, his fists clenching and opening at his sides, unsure of whether he should let this inevitable battle with Lando explode now or put his pain and anger aside until the danger had passed.
We can't look back at any one decision that brought us to this place, Lando said quietly, shaking his head. If I hadn't asked you to go to Cern Padal, you wouldn't have, and Chewie would still be here. But a lot of other people would be dead right now, probably including Kip, and we'd have no idea what was coming against us. In that case, all of us, Chewie included, would be in serious trouble.
The logic was sound, Han had to admit privately, but still, it did little to hold his broken heart together.
They'll be coming at us in swarms, he said. How many fighters can you put up?
Lando's expression was not so cocky at that question.
We've got the fighters. It's the pilots we're lacking.
Even with your belt-running game?
You know who that attracts, Lando remarked. You think any of them will stick around when they hear there's an armada moving against us?
Han paused and considered the reasoning and found that he could not disagree. He had dealt with smugglers all of his life, and he knew that most of them, above all else, saw to their own needs and safety first. And maybe, he mused, in this situation, that policy was right. Maybe they'd all be better off fleeing to Brilliant and running to the Corps, where they could get some real firepower to back them up. He was still playing out that debate in his mind when one of Lando's men called them over to a data screen. Lando spent a long minute reading it, his expression turning fast to a frown.
We might have more pilots than I expected, he said, turning the console toward Han.
Han hardly glanced at it, focusing on Lando instead.
Our enemies are already buzzing about the sector, Lando explained. We just got a call back from a couple of pilots who flew off-planet before you arrived. They were under attack against some kind of multicolored starfighters. They claim the things look like flying lumps of rock.
Like the ones Kip described, Han said somberly.
We might do better just sitting tight on the planet, Lando remarked. Give them the sky while we bury ourselves in bunkers. I've got mining tools that can burrow us underground too deep for their weapons.
Han didn't completely disagree, but he knew what had just happened to Cern Padal, and he deeply believed that all of these sudden catastrophes were connected. If they buried themselves behind defensive barriers, those enemy starfighters might not be able to get at them, but Dubrillion had a moon, a big one.
Get patrols out across the planet right away, he said. Look for craters, look for energy fields and beams.
Lando, who had just heard the story of Cern Padal's brutal end, didn't have to be told twice.
Han! Came a shout from down the corridor, and Leia came rushing out a door, C-3PO right behind her.
Oh, I heard, she cried, running up and wrapping her husband in a tight hug. Anakin told me.
Han buried his face in Leia's dark hair, buried his expressions, and let his inner turmoil remain a private thing. His frustration with Anakin and the evacuation of Cern Padal had not abated, not completely, even with his son's quick-thinking heroics against the insect creatures. Nor had he even begun to come to terms with the loss of his closest friend, his trusted companion and co-pilot for decades. And he couldn't begin to talk about it now, not without the weight of it defeating him, rendering him useless for that which was to come.
His family was here, Leia's hug pointedly reminded him, his wife and his three children. If he wasn't sharp now, if he wasn't at his very best, they might all be killed. Leia broke the hug and pushed her husband back to arm's length.
He died saving Anakin, she remarked quietly.
Han nodded, his expression stern.
Anakin's feeling horrible about it, she said with concern.
Han started to respond, sharply, that the boy deserved to feel horrible, but he bit it back. Still, that edge found its way onto his face momentarily, long enough, apparently, for perceptive Leia to catch it.
What is it? She prodded.
Han looked away from her to Lando. Hurry up with that search, he instructed, and Lando took the cue, gave a curt bow and a wink, and rushed away.
What is it?
Leia prompted again, staring hard at Han, even reaching up to gently push his chin so that he was looking at her directly.
Just some search to secure the planet, Han answered. With Anakin, I mean, Leia clarified. What is it?
Han blew a long sigh and stared at her hard.
A disagreement over our retreat, he explained.
What does that mean?
He left him, Han blurted, ending with a sputtering growl. He shook his head and gently but firmly moved Leia aside.
We've got to get ready for the attack, he said. Leia held onto his arm, forced him to turn back.
He left him, she echoed suspiciously.
Anakin left him, left Chewie, Han spat. Leia, too shocked to respond, just let go, and Han stormed away, leaving her full of questions and fears.
There was nothing else I could do.
Jason paused at the door, hearing his little brother's words. He had learned of the disaster at Cern Padal, had caught his mother crying over Chewie's demise, and he had suspected, though he had no proof other than one of his father's glances at Anakin, that his brother had somehow been involved.
You're sure of that? Came another voice inside the room, Jaina's voice.
The moon was dropping fast, Anakin replied. All the air was lighting up with fire.
From the compression, Jaina reasoned.
We didn't even know where the wind had taken Chewie, or if he was even still alive.
But Dad said he saw him, Jaina replied, and Jason winced at hearing that, fearing that Anakin was lying to cover something.
That was too late, Anakin admitted. That was even as we started blasting out of there. We had maybe 4 seconds before impact. How could we get to him and get out of there in 4 seconds?
The door opened and Jason walked in. He stared hard at his little brother, more out of sympathy than accusation, though that didn't appear to be obvious to Jaina and Anakin, given their fearful expressions.
You couldn't, Jason said,
and Anakin looked surprised indeed to find his older brother apparently backing him up.
If the air itself was starting to burst, the Falcon wouldn't have been able to reverse course against the rush. You'd have probably crashed right on top of Chewie or right beside him, and then you'd all be dead.
Anakin blinked repeatedly, blinking back tears Jason knew. He could appreciate what his brother was going through. His own grief was intense and overwhelming. Chewbacca had been like an older brother or a playful uncle to all of them, and even closer to his father than Luke was. But he realized that Anakin's grief, mixed as it was with such obvious guilt, likely dwarfed his own.
Dad doesn't see it that way, Jaina offered, and she looked back to Anakin with sincere pity. He's pretty mad.
He's outraged, Jason agreed, and Jaina sucked in her breath and gave him a look.
He's out of his mind with anger, Jason pressed, about losing his best friend. It's not really about anything you did or didn't do, he told Anakin. It's about losing Chewie.
But I...
Anakin started to reply. Jason walked right up to him, dropped his hands on his brother's shoulders, and stared him in the eye hard.
Could you have gotten to him and pulled him to safety? He asked, his voice dripping with the intensity of the Force,
forcing both Anakin and Jaina to hear and register every word, every syllable, with crystalline clarity. Anakin seemed as if he would topple as the weight of that question, the point central to his emotional existence at that time, fell over him. As he replayed those last terrible moments on Cern Padal, No, he answered honestly.
Jason patted his shoulders and turned away.
Then you did exactly the right thing, he said. You saved the rest of them.
But, Dad, Anakin started.
Dad's not half as devastated and angry as Chewie would have been if he knew that all the rest of you were going to die trying to save him.
Jason snapped back before Anakin's reasoning could even begin to take form.
Can you imagine trying to face the fears of your own death, knowing that your best friends were going to die because of you? How would Obi-Wan Kenobi have felt if Uncle Luke had rushed back in to help him in his last fight with Darth Vader? He'd have been horrified, because Uncle Luke would have thrown his own life away and destroyed the only chance the Rebel Alliance had against the Empire. Chewie's the same way. He saved you, saved the son of his dearest friend, and the act cost him his life. He died content in that knowledge.
He turned away from Anakin then, looking back at Jaina, who stood open-mouthed, obviously stunned by his eloquence. Behind him, he heard Anakin sniffle, and knew the flood of tears, held back thus far because of that terrible guilt, was about to pour forth. And he felt like crying too, something he didn't want to do in front of his little brother, and surely not in front of his sister. With a nod to Jaina, Jason rushed out of the room.
Jaina went to Anakin then, wrapping him in a big hug, and he didn't even try to pull back from it. He buried his face in her thick hair, his shoulders bobbing.
The Rejuvenator is at Ord Mantell, Leia explained, looking up from the console and the communicator. She can be here in 3 days.
Lando looked over at Han, neither of them thrilled by the news. Leia had been calling out all morning, trying to locate some real firepower within the region. But Dubrillion was far from the core and far from any current New Republic activities, leaving the Rejuvenator as the closest major warship. Unfortunately, the swarm of enemy ships would likely arrive within 2 days if they kept their present course and speed. And that was a big if, Han knew. Those tracking the incoming ships had indicated that they were accelerating, which left a bad taste in his mouth. If those ships were accelerating now, why hadn't they done so earlier, and thus caught up to the defenseless refugees? Han knew when he had been baited, and he had to wonder now if he and the other refugees had inadvertently led their enemies right to Dubrillion.
"Put out the call for the Star Destroyer," Lando said to Leia. Then he turned to Han. "We'll hold them off until the Rejuvenator gets here."
"Anything from your brother?" Han asked Leia, who just shook her head. They believed that Luke and Mara would have made Bel-Cotton by that time, were perhaps on their way back, but they had heard nothing to confirm that belief.
"We might still be able to get out of here," Leia offered. "We pack the fastest ships and head out for Ord Mantell and put a call ahead to the Rejuvenator to have them meet us halfway."
"That warship doesn't pack half as much firepower as Dubrillion," Lando argued. "If we're going to fight them anyway, I'd rather it be right here." Leia looked to Han, who nodded that Lando had a point.
"We'll hold them off and let the Rejuvenator come in here to help," Lando went on, his tone showing more confidence, as if the plan was fully unfolding even as he spoke. "And if we can get the call relayed down the line, we can have half the fleet here in a matter of a week."
"If they listen," Leia reminded him. "The New Republic has got its own problems, and closer to home. I don't think they'll send out half the fleet to worry about some minor problem at the Outer Rim."
"Minor?" Lando echoed incredulously, and Han winced as if he had just been slapped. After all, Han had just seen an entire planet destroyed. But the counselors wouldn't view things in the same way as Han or anyone else out here at the Outer Rim, Leia knew without a doubt. They had cities with more people in them than every planet in the closest 3 sectors combined, and stories of complete catastrophe rolled into Coruscant every day. They'd send some help, of course, likely in the form of a single explorer's ship or a squadron of X-Wings, if Dubrillion was lucky.
"The Rejuvenator has got a task force with her, a few smaller cruisers, gunships, cargo support, and even a crew transport," she explained. "We'll put out the call for them to come in with all speed."
"And we'll have the way clear for them to link up with our own forces," Lando said confidently. He looked to Han.
What do you plan to do with the Falcon?
I'll be up there fighting, Han promised.
And there was indeed the promise of death in his eyes, a cold, hard stare, as chilling a look as Leia had ever seen on his face. He was transferring his grief into anger, she knew. He was intending to make every enemy pay for the loss of his closest friend. A shudder coursed down her spine. Jason, Jaina, and Anakin walked into the control room then, their expressions equally solid and determined.
We'll be up too, Jaina declared.
Oh, no, Han started to argue.
We're Jedi Knights, Jason interrupted. You can't keep us out of the fight.
I don't need three co-pilots, Han shot back.
And you've already got one because I'm coming with you, Leia declared.
Everyone in the room turned to regard her curiously. Leia had long ago traded in her warrior garb for one of diplomacy, but she steeled her gaze, an expression that offered no room for compromise.
There you have it, Han agreed. Your mother's flying beside me.
All three of the kids were shaking their heads, telling Leia clearly that Han was missing their intention.
I'm not your co-pilot, Jaina agreed. I fly better in a starfighter.
Oh, no, Han said again, shaking his head emphatically.
You've got plenty of ships, Anakin protested to Lando.
And there aren't any better pilots on Dubrillion than us, Jason added. And if we lose the battle up there, the fighting will come down here in a hurry.
I'd rather be up there fighting where I have the advantage, Jaina agreed.
And Leia knew that it was confidence, not bravado, carrying those words. A confidence well-placed, given Jaina's top score among the belt runners. Once again, Leia was reminded of the splendid job Mara was doing with her talented daughter, emotionally as well as physically.
All three of us can fight, Jason added. You know that. And you need pilots.
Han started to reply, stopped, and took a deep and steadying breath, then looked to Lando.
Can you give them shields from on-planet, he asked, like the ones they had in the asteroid belt?
I'm bringing Belt Runner 1 back in, Lando replied. For all her power, the ship's got no offensive arrays. So she'd be a sitting target up there. I'm going to put her in high dock, but keep her powered up so she'll be able to lend some shielding power to the equipped starfighters as long as they stay close to home.
How many starfighters can we equip? Han asked, and he narrowed his eyes, obviously plotting.
But Lando shook his head, throwing those visions far away.
Not an easy thing to do, and takes up too much room, he explained, and too much time. I couldn't even get the Falcon wired to take the power shield boost within a week, and I'd have to take away half of your systems just to make your power grid accessible to the signal.
So you've got a few TIE fighters and a couple of TIE bombers, Han remarked.
Enough for the kids, Lando replied with a shrug. Those TIE fighters don't carry any weapons, Jaina protested.
None of the three kids liked where this conversation was going.
They do now, Lando assured her with a cocky grin.
Jaina eyed him skeptically.
Not much, he admitted. Just a single laser cannon and one bank of torpedoes. It'll take some pretty amazing flying for you guys to hand out any real damage to the enemy fleet.
He paused there and let the words hang in the air, and Leia saw the intrigue mounting on the faces of her three children. She looked back to Lando and wasn't sure if she should be grateful or angry with him for the sly way he had just played on the egos of her three children. For Leia, despite her recognition of their skills, judgment, and training, and despite her understanding that the situation here was purely desperate, wasn't thrilled at all about the prospect of having the three kids up there in the middle of the fighting. She looked to Han, but she found no answers in his perplexed expression. And indeed, there seemed few options. They had seen the tracking data on the incoming force, and it was huge.
You stay close to the planet, Leia said.
All three of you, Han added, loudly and firmly, poking his finger at the kids.
Within reach of Belt Runner One's help and the planet's turbolasers, Leia finished.
Jaina and Jason beamed at the news that they wouldn't be left out of it this time. There was no smile on the face of young Anakin, though. He stared at his father, looking for some hint of forgiveness. He found none.
Jaina and Jason started out of the room then, sweeping Anakin up in their wake.
"You think Mom will be able to help Dad up there?" Jason asked Jaina, honestly concerned. "She hasn't done much flying lately. Maybe one of us should go with him."
Jaina considered the words for a few moments, then shook her head, reminding herself that her mother was no novice to action. Sure, Leia and Han were older now, but both still had plenty of fight in them.
"They'll hand it out to the enemy," she assured her brother. "What's Lando got that can match the Millennium Falcon?"
Jason returned his sister's smile and turned the conversation toward their own strategy for the upcoming battle. They looked to Anakin to join in, but he was obviously paying no attention to them at all, lost somewhere deep inside himself. Indeed, Anakin's thoughts were locked in the past, replaying those last terrible moments of Cern Padal again and again, trying to determine if he had indeed done something wrong, if there might have been something, anything, he could do to change events to save Chewbacca. Logically, there seemed no answers. Logically, Anakin had to believe that he had done the right thing, taken the only option available to save the Falcon and the many people aboard her. But logic couldn't hold in the young boy's heart, not against his father's judgmental look, not against the reality that Chewie was gone, was really gone. And there was nothing anyone could do about that.
"They're in the system," Leia announced.
She sat in the Falcon's second seat beside Han, with a nervous C-3PO standing behind them, chattering away about everything and nothing all at once.
"Possibly you could intercept their transmissions," the droid remarked. "I would be most happy to translate if they are in a language unintelligible to you."
He went on, offering his skills, and Han turned to Leia and scowled.
"Couldn't we have just left him behind?" he asked.
With a smile, Leia glanced briefly back to C-3PO, a friend and one she usually considered fine company, then turned her attention forward again.
"Or I could translate our own communications into code," the droid rambled on, despite the fact that neither Han nor Leia was listening to him.
Han nodded to Leia. He could hear the first sounds of battle from the starfighters Lando had put on patrol along the orbits of the outer planets. Pilots called in descriptions of the incoming enemy fleet, which matched exactly the descriptions Kip Duran had offered of the enemy starfighters. "You hear that, kid?" Han asked, clicking on the comm to the top gunnery pod.
"It's going to be a rough ride," Kip replied.
He was seated comfortably in the gunnery pod atop the Falcon, having offered to sit in as gunner. He hadn't quite recovered from his escape ordeal yet, not enough for him to take a ship of his own into the fight, and Lando didn't have a ship he wanted to fly anyway. Leia opened up the communications to all channels, scanning and listening, and the reports came in fast and furious, cries for help, cries of victory scored, warnings that the enemy force was rolling in closer to the inner planets, closer to Dubrillion and Destrillion.
"Getting hot out there," Han muttered.
Leia understood his tone, recognizing the nervous edge that went beyond his fears of battle. Like Leia, Han wasn't afraid for himself, but for his three kids, each flying a TIE fighter down there, below, in close orbit to Dubrillion. The Falcon's console warning signals chirped in, and glancing down at the small viewer, Han and Leia caught the approach of the first retreating friendly starfighters, just a few greenish blips on the screen. And then, abruptly, that screen practically turned red for the sheer number of ships tracking in behind them. "Too many," came a cry over the comm from one of the starfighters, and Han and Leia could certainly appreciate the sentiment. Han took a deep and steadying breath. He expected Leia to tell him to go to the lower gun pod, that she could take the helm, but he knew that his place was up here, flying the Falcon.
"Just feed me the data as it comes in," he said, to preempt any requests.
To his surprise, though, Leia stood up. He looked at her curiously.
"I'll be in the lower gun pod," she explained, and Han's expression turned even more incredulous.
"I feel like shooting something," Leia said, and though it was obviously a joke, a statement made to alleviate the tension, neither Han nor Leia even cracked a smile. Han stared at his wife for a moment, at her grim expression. Then he nodded, and Leia kissed him on the cheek and headed for the lower gunnery pod. Han, too, could do some shooting from up here, just the small front lasers, but his real job was to keep the enemy fighters in line for the bigger guns.
"Can you hear me?" came Leia's call over the comm.
"I got you," Han assured her. "Make sure you hold the left flank, and Kip, you've got the right."
"Ready to start these monsters singing," Kip called back.
Han shook his head at the man's unending cockiness. He, too, had that in him, but strangely, he didn't feel overly confident at all at the moment. He looked down at his tracking instruments, the screen glowing red from the sheer number of blips. Not confident at all.
They heard the reports as well, and the first cries of battle joined, and the first losses to their comrades cut deep into the hearts of the three younger Solos as they swept past Lando's tallest towers in their shield-enhanced TIE fighters. Beltrunner 1 was working perfectly on them, they knew, but their first run since coming up from Dubrillion had shown them that the shield effect grew minimal as soon as any of the TIE fighters broke out of the planet's atmosphere. Their father's subsequent orders had been unyielding and thoroughly predictable. They were to run out the duration of the battle as surface patrol for Dubrillion. The three weren't pleased, but in truth, their only advantage over ordinary starfighters was the shield enhancement, and without it, they weren't even fractionally as good as normally equipped TIEs.
"Watch your wing," came one cry over the comm.
On my tail," came another.
"Crony, get out of there," came a third.
"Keep your calm, kid," came a familiar voice, Han's voice.
"And hold your course. I got you."
"I can't shake him," the troubled pilot Crony cried.
The kids heard the whump of the Millennium Falcon's quad laser cannons.
"Thanks," an obviously relieved Crony said.
"On your tail now, Falcon," came another frantic voice.
"We got him," the unshakable Han replied. Jaina grasped her stick so hard with frustration that her knuckles whitened. She gritted her teeth so tightly that her jaw hurt.
"Going up to black space," she called to her brothers.
"You know Dad's orders," Jason protested, but Jaina had already put her nose up with Anakin right behind her.
"We'll stay atmospheric, but just within," Jaina explained. "I want to see what's going on."
The three TIE fighters came into black space a moment later, that thin area between atmospheric and spaceflight. Outside the reflective light of the planet's atmosphere, they could see the streaks of the raging battle now, lending a visual to the constant stream of cries and tactical calls on the comm. Focusing on Han's call and on the rushing lights above, Jaina thought she had spotted the Falcon.
"A dozen breaking for Dubrillion," came Jason's sudden call, and Jaina turned to regard her brother in the fighter beside her, then followed his look to the horizon, where a squadron of enemy ships were firing through the atmosphere.
"They'll come above the city from the southeast," Jaina explained. "Let's go."
And down the three went, bursting back into the daytime blue sky of Lando's planet.
"Shield strengthening," Anakin reported.
The TIE fighters roared over the city, swerving in and out of the tall towers. Jason called out first, spotting the flight of enemy fighters coming in hot, their volcano-like cannons firing repeatedly. The three TIEs soared out of the southeastern corner of the city, charging to meet the challenge. But then the surface cannons roared to life, a blazing, thunderous volley of blue-streaking energy bolts filling the sky.
"Back," Jaina called, pulling into a loop that turned her back for the city, and her brothers followed suit.
As they came back around for a visual, Jaina's eyes confirmed what her sensors were already telling her. The strafing enemy fighters had all been destroyed. Far from satisfied, though, the battle-hungry trio went right back up to black space.
"Widen the formation," Jaina ordered, "and keep your eyes open. Let's get the next group before they get in range of Lando's cannons."
Even as she finished, a smaller group of enemy fighters soared down at Dubrillion. The three TIE fighters rushed off to meet them, Jaina in the middle, with her brothers moving out wide at her flanks. As they approached the incoming five enemies, the boys rolled back in, wingtip to wingtip with Jaina. They worked in unison, seeming more like one starfighter than three, each with its single laser cannon roaring to life. A pair of enemy fighters disappeared under the sudden barrage, but the remaining three reacted fast, leveling to meet this new threat. Their cannons blared, and the three Solos didn't try to evade, but took hit after hit. The shields held, the ships came together. A trio of torpedoes, a burst of laser fire, and the threat was gone. That particular threat, at least, for now calls from Dubrillion's surface, mingled with the cries from the swerving and dodging fighters above.
More enemies had come in at the city from every angle, and the three Solo kids knew that Lando's gunners were hard-pressed.
"This is Gouch and TB-1," came a call from one of the TIE bombers. "We've got them."
Jaina led her brothers back into blue space and saw the TIE bomber rolling out from the city, trading hits with several enemy fighters, but taking all they could hand out with its enhanced shields. The city, though, was starting to take a beating, with fires burning in several buildings. The surface turbo lasers continued to thunder away, scoring hit after hit, but for every enemy fighter that went down, a dozen more seemed to take its place.
"Let's go," Jaina cried.
"Belt Runner 1 here," came a cry. "We're hit, we're hit. Taking shield energy back."
"We're stripped," Anakin confirmed, and Jason and Jaina, too, glanced at their instruments to confirm that Belt Runner 1 had taken back the shielding power.
"What do we do?"
"Don't get hit," a grim Jaina returned, and she led the way down, soaring in between the buildings, dodging the volcanic missiles and tremendous surface cannon blasts, her lasers blaring away.
"I'm hit," came Pilot Gouch's voice. "Can't hold it, can't."
A huge fireball rolled up from the eastern side of the city, a poignant reminder to the three young Jedi that this time was for real. Jason got the first kill, firing off a shot as he rounded a tower, scoring a hit blindly on an enemy fighter, and luckily avoiding the return shot. Another enemy had him in line, though, and he started to cry out. Jaina blew past him, firing her second torpedo, and that enemy, too, went away.
"Thanks, sis," Jason remarked, and he followed Jaina's bank down to the left. They found Anakin pursuing one enemy, but with a trio pursuing him. He shot through a gap between towers, then pulled up fast as the fighter he was chasing crossed through the crosshairs of one of those mighty surface cannons and seemed to simply disintegrate. And as Anakin rose, he found his siblings diving down on either side of him, lasers blasting away. Anakin cut sharp to the right and reversed throttle, breaking his momentum. He hung motionless for a moment, then just as he started to drop, kicked the throttle in full and double-kicked his foot yokes right and then left again hard, dropping his nose so that he looped right under and about, slashing down. A subtle shift in his angle of descent put him on the tail of a fleeing enemy fighter, which he took out with a trio of laser blasts, left, right, and dead center. Anakin went up as Jaina and Jason went up, the three, each with another kill, rejoining above Lando's main center. They heard cheers coming over the comm, followed by a "Keep 'em running!" declaration by Lando, but it seemed as if the city was secured for the time being, for many of the enemy fighters were gone, and the cannons continued to pump away at those remaining.
"Dad told us to stay low because of the shields," Jaina called to her brothers. And before they could answer, she turned her nose to the sky.
"Shields are gone anyway," she explained. "Let's go and join the bigger fight."
"We can't..."
Jason started to protest, but his voice trailed away. Jaina smiled. She knew that her father wouldn't quite see things the way she had put them to her brothers. But that was a fight for another day. The three TIE fighters soared into black space, out of Dubrillion's atmosphere altogether. They saw the streaks of light of the continuing battle. Their instruments told them that many other craft were all about them. Multicolored coral blew to sparkling bits before them as one enemy fighter and then another fell victim to the thundering quad lasers. Han focused on that sight, the opening escape route for the Falcon, while Leia worked the bottom guns, taking out another stubborn enemy. Their right flank got hit several times until Kip had the forward path cleared enough so that he could swivel the big guns around and begin popping away.
"Oh, dear," C-3PO wailed as the Falcon took another shuddering hit. "I do believe there are too many," he added, flying away under the jolt of another hit, waving his golden arms frantically.
And though his eyes couldn't really widen with horror, to Leia, turning about to regard him, they surely seemed to.
"We'll all be killed."
"Shut him up or I'll toss him out," Han warned.
Han put the Falcon up on edge, ignoring Kip's protest to keep it steady, and ran the gauntlet between several enemy fighters. He saw an X-wing cut down from the left, four lasers blasting away, but with a swarm of pursuers on its tail.
"Too hot," the X-wing pilot called, "braking for Dubrillion."
"Go," Han muttered under his breath. On the other side, an A-wing tried to streak away but got pummeled by volleys of rocky missiles, heated stone that latched on and bored through the hull,
pocking the ship. The pilot cried out for help, but Han couldn't get to her in time, and then, as she tried one last evasive maneuver, she cut back too fast and slammed headlong into one of the pursuing enemy fighters, both ships exploding in a shower of tiny bits.
"We're running out of ships," Leia warned.
"Shields gone," came a cry from the X-Wing pilot, a call they had heard repeatedly over the last few minutes, and one that echoed ominously Kip's description of his first encounter with the enemy fighters.
Han banked that way.
"Clear them out," he called to Kip, as the pursuers of the diving X-Wing came into view.
"Got 'em," Kip assured him, and the quad lasers blasted away, clearing off a line of those pursuing ships. Still, Kip and the Falcon couldn't get them all, and the X-Wing seemed doomed. But then suddenly came a burst from the other side, rising from Dubrillion as it grew larger and larger in the Falcon's viewscreen. A trio of laser cannon pulses taking out the pursuit and allowing the X-Wing to break free toward the planet. Han and Leia's elation at the rescue lasted only the few seconds it took them to discern the source of the reinforcements. 3 modified TIE fighters.
"Break back to the planet," Han cried to his children. "Use Lando's shields."
"Belt Runner 1's down," Jaina replied. "No shields there either."
"Break back," Han screamed.
"Too many up here," Leia added. "We're all heading home. Let the surface guns take them."
Even as she finished, the 3 TIEs zoomed past the Falcon.
"Go ahead," came Jaina's voice. "We'll fight the retreat."
"Break back!"
Han screamed again, trembling with a fit of rage. Leia called out to him over the comm, sensing and sharing in his distress. She knew it was worse for Han, though, understood that he was on the very edge of control here, his grief and horror for Chewbacca wrapping itself around his fears for his children, elevating his sense of loss and dread to the breaking point. He put the Falcon into a tight turn. Leia wasn't surprised, bringing her around to follow the TIE fighters, and already the 2 parents could hear the banter of their children as the 3 intercepted a host of enemy fighters. Mostly it was coordinating banter, the "you break left, I've got the right" sort of calls that pilots always shared, but there was something else, something that unnerved and bolstered Leia all at once. It was their tone. For the kids were into it with all the passion of seasoned warriors, flying heart and soul, full of energy, full of spirit. Han and Leia heard the whoops of delight as enemy fighter after fighter went away in a burst of sparkling pieces. But both parents held their grim countenance, for both had seen enough battles to understand that those whoops of delight would become cries of despair in an instant if one of the 3 got blown apart. And now, by their instruments and the visible streaking lines before them, it seemed as if the element of surprise had flown, as if the enemy fighters were converging in an orderly and devastating fashion on the 3 hotshots.
"Get there, get there," Han muttered repeatedly through gritted teeth, pushing the Falcon to her limits.
Something jolted them hard then. Not a missile, but a grabbing beam, and a moment later, indicator lights began flashing that the Falcon's shields were faltering. Up above, Kip blazed away with the cannons, but those hits that Han had been ignoring, the glancing blows to the side, began to take on more profound implications. And both Han and Leia heard their 3 children calling out that there were too many to fight.
"Break back to Dubrillion," Jaina cried, the most welcome call Han and Leia had ever heard. But then Anakin's voice, cold and calm, chimed in.
"No," he said, "follow me."
"Too many," Jason complained.
"We've run the belt, they haven't," Anakin said grimly.
Leia's eyes popped open wide.
"They've got no shields," she whispered, more to herself than anyone else. But she heard Han's groan and realized that he had heard her.
A series of whumps from the top laser cannons reminded them that their children were beyond their reach, that they too had no shields, and there were simply too many enemy fighters between them and the kids, between them and the belt, for them to get anywhere near the 3 TIEs. Han pulled the microphone from the console and roared into it.
"Break back!"
No response, just static. The kids had already entered Lando's folly. Jason was the 3rd in, and nearly the 1st out, for almost as soon as he entered the asteroid belt, he had to dive into an evasive turn and roll to avoid one spinning rock.
He cut around the bottom of the asteroid, but couldn't begin to breathe easier, for he found an enemy fighter coming in hard from his left, firing away, and there was no way he could dodge that missile. An asteroid rushed past his left, taking the hit, and then came a second larger explosion as another asteroid swept past, colliding with the enemy fighter and its distracted pilot. The reprieve proved short-lived, though, for a horde of enemies had come in right behind the three young Jedi, braving the asteroids with fanatical single-mindedness. Anakin, in between his brother and sister, saw Jason's near miss, then near takeout by the volcanic missile, and though his own path had been somewhat clearer thus far, he could certainly understand Jason's call that they had to get right out, that it was simply too noisy and wild in here. The three swooped and dived, Anakin nearly colliding with Jaina. Only her deft flying kept the two TIE fighters apart. And all the while the enemies came in fast pursuit. Another smashed into an asteroid, but that hardly deterred the horde. "Take us out, Jaina," Jason implored his sister. Anakin ignored the call and fell into a sense of calmness. Something had guided him in here. Something had beckoned to him, promising him a better battlefield against the overwhelming odds. The Force. He knew it was the Force. In here, the three young Jedi could use their insights where the pilots of their enemy fighters, whatever they might be, could not. He knew that instinctively. But now that he was in the midst of this insanity, asteroids, missiles, and enemy ships buzzing all about him, doubts began to fester and grow. He saw Jaina cut up ahead of him, then using a brilliant barrel roll and swerve maneuver to cut between a pair of asteroids, she rolled off the face of a third and came around firing, her single laser striking three rapid hits on an enemy fighter. She was in the mode, Anakin realized without doubt. If only he could tap into it. "Hear me," came the youngest Solo's telepathic call to his siblings. "Join with me." "Anakin?" came Jason's conventional reply. Jaina didn't reply, and Anakin sensed that she had already accepted his call. "Three as one," the young Jedi telepathically imparted. "Let go. Lend me your eyes." It all happened in a matter of seconds, the three young Solos finding communion, a telepathic joining in bond. Now each flew with the added perspectives offered by the other two flanking craft, giving each extra eyes, extra perceptions. No reactions now, just the purest of anticipation, as all three gave in to the Force. They wove with perfect precision, replacing each other in the line, bringing cannons to bear from slightly different angles, ones their enemy fighter counterparts couldn't anticipate or react to in time. They came around asteroids with ease, beginning their firing before they ever could logically know that an enemy was around the backside, but shooting with perfect accuracy, blowing fighter after fighter out of the sky, or taking those in close pursuit through such a maze of asteroids that the enemy ships inevitably slammed into one or were forced to break off the chase. Their symbiosis mounted, and Anakin, as the focal point, felt they were working together and with the Force as he had only dreamed was possible. The perfect squadron, joined in thought and purpose, communicating with each other as quickly as the internal workings of his own brain. The enemy fighters couldn't come close to pacing the trio. Any that got near were just blasted out of the sky or run into asteroids. Anakin led his siblings in a turn, rushing hard back into the bulk of the enemy forces, dodging asteroids and missiles, scoring hit after hit. He fell deeper into the Force, his hands moving as a blur, his mind whirling. Under one asteroid, over another, around a third and then a fourth, firing at those precise moments to score hits, spinning snap turns at those precise moments to dodge enemy missiles. Faster and faster it went, all a blur, Anakin trembling under the strain, feeling the pressure from his siblings as they, too, fell deeper and deeper. It was perfect fighting, perfect teamwork, the three slicing the enemy ranks apart, thinning them with every pass, and forcing more and more to abandon, if they could, the insanity of Lando's folly. Too much information coursed through Anakin. He was trembling violently, he knew, though he hardly felt it. Missile after asteroid after missile zipped across his line of sight. Or was it Jason's line of sight? Too much, he knew, too insane. He trembled. He telepathically called to his siblings. He desperately tried to hold the bond together.
"Anakin," he heard Jaina's call over the comm, and he realized then that he had passed the breaking point, that the bond was gone.
"Can't hold it," he called back through gritted teeth as he descended into a trembling fit of the purest intensity, fighting hard to hold his consciousness.
"Vector out," Jaina cried. And one thought accompanied those words, Jason's telepathic instructions to turn and burst into hyperspace. The course angle indicated by those instructions continued to change as Anakin went on, Jason keeping pace with the movements of the TIE fighter and the relative asteroids. Anakin clipped one just a bit, causing little or no damage to his ship, but sending him into a disastrous spin.
"Go," came Jason's command, followed by the almost magical weight of persuasion of the Force.
Anakin pumped his yokes desperately, trying to level off, trying to hold his focus, as the stars whirled about him, as the asteroids and enemies cruised past him. He couldn't straighten at all. It was only a matter of seconds before he was splattered, and then... he was gone, shot out of Lando's folly in the blink of an eye. He heard Jaina's calls for him for just an instant, and then he heard no more as blackness rushed up to engulf him. Jaina and Jason managed somehow to extricate themselves from the belt with some fancy flying and a good share of dumb luck. Han and Leia, returning from the gunnery pod, watched it all from the cockpit of the Falcon, sitting in stunned silence. They could hardly believe what they had just witnessed, the beauty and the precision and the loss of their youngest child. The fighting was over, for the time being at least, for the remaining enemies were fleeing, headed for the outer planets and then beyond.
"Where is he?" Han cried at Jaina and Jason.
"He jumped to hyperspace," Jason tried to explain. "He was in a spin. He had to get out."
"Did you get a course setting?" Han interrupted.
There came a long pause, and Han and Leia understood the truth of it. Anakin had just blasted out of there haphazardly, had leapt into hyperspace without any understanding of where it might take him, or if other solid bodies might be in the way. He could be anywhere by this time. His atoms could already be scattered all over the sector.
"You two get back to Debrillion," Han instructed. "We're going after Anakin."
"We'll go with you," Jaina started to offer.
"Back to Debrillion," Han roared at her, as angry, as on the verge of losing control as Leia had ever seen him, as his kids had ever heard him.
Han shut down the channel then, bringing the Falcon under Lando's folly, staring out at the vastness of empty space beyond. He had no idea if the TIE fighter had survived the leap, or if Anakin had. He didn't voice that fear to Leia. He didn't have to. She knew.